I guess I'd like to start by asking a little bit about the history with this grizzly bear family, and I'm not sure, Garth, you might be best positioned to answer this question, but had any of the bears in this family unit ever, to your knowledge or to the Conservation Service's knowledge, exhibited any aggressive behavior towards humans?
Not that I know of. No, they have just been in town, well, a number of times on a several different years, but no, I don't know of an aggressive event.
Okay. And Drew, had you do you know any of any reports to the rap line that had indicated that they had exhibited aggression towards people?
I have no reports of aggressive nature towards people.
Yeah, because one of the major concerns that seems to be surfacing in Nelson, and people are obviously, I think you're both aware, very upset with the way the situation's been handled. How does a situation escalate to the point where a decision like this is made to kill first the cub with the limp and then the mother, and now, I think many people feel like it was kind of a foregone conclusion once the mother was gone that the other cubs were probably goners.
Garth, maybe I'll take a quick response. I'll give a quick response on behalf of the VCCOS, and then Garth can speak to the specific behavioral items that are relevant. So, and Jamie, you bring up a lot of great points, and these decisions are not made casually. When a VCCO responds to these complaints, whether it be a benign sighting or if there's a bear in an urban setting, an officer will respond in a way that aligns with our provincial wildlife policy and our intervention guidance that is developed like qualified professionals like Garth and subject matter experts like there are many out there, and that we utilize those matrices, those metrics to determine if a response is required and what that response is going to be based upon a number of different factors within those matrices. And all that matrix can be found online for anybody to see so that we can show and demonstrate that, and be held accountable if necessary.
On July 23rd, the Conservation Service pointed to that bear with a limp because they were getting a lot of calls about it along the highway between Nelson and Weimer. And they said at that time that the bear was feeding and the injury was a year old, and everything, seemed to be going fine for that bear. And then, less than 3 weeks later, the bear was dispatched. So, do either of you have any explanation for why that escalated so quickly?
You're talking about
The
the
yearling
cub,
with the limp.
the limp. I guess I would go back to your original point. Had the bear shown any aggression, and our job is to protect the public, and we're going to try to intervene before the bear, if somebody gets hurt, and so we're looking at. Drew mentioned the category 1, 2, and 3, and this bear was a category 3 bear because it was food conditioned. And at that point, it's not black and white when the animal's removed because it is a category 3 animal. We're just looking at signs that this bear is behaving in a way that will put it in places where there might be a conflict or an aggression. Like, for example, going up into garages or approaching houses or going up under people's decks where there can something like a surprise can happen and a person might get attacked. So we're not waiting till somebody gets injured and then we remove bears. That isn't how we wait. We're not waiting that long. So the ensuing 3 weeks that you talked about is just the escalation of the bear's behavior got to a point where we said, okay, we're not comfortable anymore. And we're not comfortable. There will not be a surprise and someone will get injured. So that's how the timing happens, and that's where the line happens in many of the cases for bears that are hanging around town repeatedly. We know that they are hanging around town, and we know that they are close to people, but it's the behavior of the bear that sort of
So
come.
is it more the proximity or is it more the behavior? Because these bears have been around, I mean, the mother has been around humans quite a lot over the last several years, as you mentioned.
It's all of the above, and you nailed it. It's not just one thing, unless it's like chewing on a person, like, you know, that's one thing, but it's the totality of circumstances that have the officers intervene in the manner that they do. And you know, we've recently had a significant event that you know, where a bear wasn't called into the BCCOS, and it was in close proximity to people. It was up on decks. It was getting into garbage, and you know, had been seen in this neighborhood for multiple weeks, and was getting closer and closer in people, and eventually hurt somebody.
This
And
is the one in Port
yes,
Moody, or yep.
in the Lower Mainland. And so that's what we're talking about, is that kind of scenario. So you know, these matrices are built on case studies and behavioral analysis of what has happened. And so that's, and Garth's exactly right. We're, you know, we're charged with public safety, and we need to intervene before there's a public safety related issue. Had that bear, and that, again, it's hypothetically, had those bears gotten close, you know, the escalation does, it does happen. Like, there is going to be an escalate, or there it should. There normally is an escalation in bears' behavior as they get more comfortable with people, and in this case, the people were more too comfortable with the animals, and they get closer and closer, and then there'll be a subsequent issue where, you know, God forbid, another young kid gets hurt, or even, you know, a person. So Garth's exactly right. Like, we have to take the necessary steps so that something doesn't happen. And unfortunately, a bear is going to lose its life. In most cases, they're not, right?
Yeah. And so I guess, Garth, maybe this question is for you, but my understanding is there have been efforts to recover the grizzly population in our area over the last, you know, decade or more. You know, if that's the goal is to recover the population, then how do we create situations where is the goal coexistence? If we're recovering a population of apex predators, how do we manage that coexistence better?
Well, I think managing attractants is a big thing, and you know, understanding that we're all part of the problem, because we all have attractants around, and it's like it's the accumulation, it's the addition of all of them. There's also, at least in my, I'm of the age now where I don't think we're gonna just get there one day. It's a lot of work for people to clear up everything in every town, house, and yard in British Columbia so that bears don't come in the yard or come into town. Or in what about suburban areas, where look at what Nelson goes all the way to Slocan and Balfour. It's just something we have to work at forever, basically, in my mind. And coexistence, that's what coexistence means, is it's forever. You're going to live with these guys forever. I think grizzly bears in the Nelson area are recovered. They're limited by food now. It's been decades since they've been limited by mortality, human caused mortality. And so what we're doing is we're seeing that, not the price or the cost of success, but we're seeing that success, because bears are living everywhere, right in our backyards. And we're going to, and we have to, in some way, define how much we want to have that happen. How many, where we want to have bears, and where we can live with the risk, and where we cannot. Because there's going to be lots of people who have bears in their yard, and we're not going to see that as a risk. But then they go into towns where there's much greater chance that a kid's going to come around a corner on a bike and scare it, or something like that, and that we won't, or we can't tolerate. And that's a social decision. In no small part, a lot of the reason that grizzly bears have recovered over the last 60 years is a change in people's social views around large carnivores. And it's not because we in the government did some fantastic, wonderful job. It's just largely us changing our perspectives about carnivores and not shooting them and killing them. And now they're willing to come into town, something that they would have never even dreamed of 70 years ago.
So the animal behavior has changed along with human behavior.
Absolutely.
Can I ask about the relocation of the two yearlings after the mother and the cub were killed? What was the thinking behind moving them to Gladstone as opposed to, you know, some people have said, oh, they would have done better at the north end of Kootenay Lake, where there's, you know, less, maybe less proximity to other communities, and that Christina Lake, particularly being, you know, only 30 kilometers away, which is not that far for a grizzly bear to travel in a few days, under normal circumstances. Was there any thinking about putting them somewhere further away from human habitation?
What we were looking for is a place that would have huckleberries at this time of year. And we knew that on those two mountains, there were north-facing areas of huckleberry, and that's what we were targeting. And the bears did go up there actually when we released them. The idea in moving these two yearlings is that we would give them one chance before we remove the family. We didn't feel that that injured cub would have had much of a chance if we moved it out of its home range and it ends up split up with its mother and its siblings. We just didn't feel it had a chance. We talked to our vet quite a bit about that. So that's why we took those two healthy individuals and moved them. We also knew from past experience that yearling, especially late in the year, yearling grizzly bears can survive on their own and have done. And we've had numerous examples of that in British Columbia over the years. So the idea of collaring these two was just it was one way of not having to remove all four bears at once. And our hope was these guys are going to revert back to natural food. So we picked an area where we knew there were berries, and unfortunately, in a year when there was not a lot of berries, this is a relatively poor huckleberry year, and so we targeted those patches. Meadow Creek is a bit of a broad example. We could have targeted some upper elevation north facing patches there. It would have been further out. We would not have been able to get them 30 kilometers from the town of Meadow Creek. So the bears could have just as easily gone down and gone into Meadow Creek. It's pretty hard in the Kootenays to get a bear much more than about 30 kilometers from a community. And we're more targeting the habitat and hoping that they'll stick to that habitat and that seasonal habitat. And we knew that it was a long shot, not because these bears were too young or they were unhealthy, because they weren't. It was more because they spent a lot of time in town. They're only 2 years old, and they spent a lot of time in town because they were there last year too. So they were quite habituated to eating human foods, whether it's garbage or just fruit in between the people's houses. They were doing both.
Drew, is the Conservation Officer Service in a position, like, so once the cubs, once the yearlings showed up in Christina Lake proper after having been relocated, is there any possibility that the service could have deployed resources in the community to help people managing their attractants or to manage that situation a little more effectively?
I like that question, and yes, we did. So we had an officer that was in and around that community. We brought in his supervisor from an outside zone, sorry, outside community to help with the educational component, to do attractant management, to see if there was an opportunity to financially educate somebody, that was leaving out their attractant. So yeah, we did do that. Our resources are limited. We have 120 officers that are available across the province on any given day, and we have about 40,000 human wildlife conflict serv calls for service each year, and about 10,000 calls for service for poaching, polluting complaints. So our resources are limited, but we did do our best efforts in with what we had, and we deployed the resources that we had to help with that.
And just one more question. There have been some disturbing reports, some I've heard firsthand, others in the media around the dispatching of the mother bear in Nelson, and some are suggesting that she suffered unnecessarily in that process. Do you have any comment on that?
So the officers responding did dispatch that, took a shot. That animal then went into a known kind of water area. The officers then decided, because there was two yearlings in and around that with her, they deployed their drone to determine, where she was. They got a call from the local RCMP that he had seen where that bear had went and that it was deceased. The officers immediately responded. Learned that the animal was, wasn't ultimately died dead at that exact moment, and then dispatched her. So it was all within minutes of her dispatching.
I mean, thank you for sharing those details. It's definitely hard to hear that, and I'm sure it's hard for the officers involved too.
It is, and it you know these situations are very dynamic with a lot of working parts, and it's officers he took the shot that he felt that was necessary to kill her. Ultimately, it would have killed her. They're very tough animals, and sometimes we're working with the use of tools that are not 100% proof all the time, and that's just the nature of the beast. But the animal they followed all their proper procedures, responded professionally, and even if there was a bit of a time delay, a small time delay, she was ultimately dispatched, and we don't believe that she needlessly suffered. She was incapacitated and then was subsequently killed immediately.
I guess one of the questions I have is regarding the public, and some people feel that the trust has been broken with the Conservation Officer Service because of the way things played out here with the WildSafe program. I'm not asking you to go into any of those details, but I would question, many people are saying if they see a bear, don't report the whereabouts. Don't tell the Conservation Officer Service, because there's this impression in the community now that these bears will be dispatched, whether black bear, grizzly bear, what have you. Do you have anything to say to the community around trust that they feel has been broken with the service?
That's a very, very good question, and I do appreciate it. And I like to reiterate that our officers are highly trained professionals, and how they assess, how they respond to all human wildlife conflicts. Everybody says that if we call the conservation officers, the bears are going to die. Like I said to you for right off the beginning, Jamie, we have 40,000 calls for service for each human wildlife conflicts every year. 40,000 bears are not dying, right? So there's a lot of false information and false narratives out there, so that people and misinformation that's being released from certain people and for a reason, and I can appreciate that there are people out there that may feel that their trust is broken. The Conservation Officer Service has been around since 1905. We've served the public each and every day. Our officers go above and beyond calls of service each and every day. They go out in the middle of the night. They've responded to the the incidents where with the recent wildfires where they left their own homes that were evacuated. They left their families to go help respond to those communities, to help save wildlife, to help save people's livestock. They even save people. There are incidents that are heart-wrenching like this one, and I get that. And this could there's opportunities for us to always reevaluate our decision making, our policies, our procedures.
So,
We embrace con sorry.
what happens if people don't report, bear sightings? I mean, ideally, the hope is that those bears will move on.
Right.
In this situation, had people not reported them, and they'd continued being, not showing aggression,
Yeah, we
would
only ask
they?
for people to report conflicts. We're not asking people to report sightings,
I
right?
see.
Bears are bears out in wild. We expect if you live in a rural community and in this beautiful province, we are going to expect that you're going to see large carnivores or conflict wildlife or urban deer. We're going to see that. We only ask the public to report conflicts, and so that officers can make those assessments to determine if they need to intervene or not, or maybe a bylaw officer, maybe that a simple call back to that individual to help educate them on how to decrease the chances of conflict with an animal.
Do either of you have any information on why the BearSmart community program has either been defunded or is not accepting applications at this time? Or is that a
Jamie,
question for the ministry?
Yeah, that's the question for the Ministry of Water, Land and Resource Stewardship. That's not involved in the Conservation Office Service at this time.
Okay. All right. Well, I thank you both for taking a chunk of the day to chat with me here today. I appreciate you guys joining us and sharing your information with our listeners. And do either of you have anything more you'd like to add?
No, not at this
Okay.
time, Jamie. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of the BCCLS, and always a pleasure to stand beside the legend of Garth Mount. And thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen.
Okay, take care.
Thanks, Jamie.
Okay, you
Nice to
too.
talk to you.
Bye.
Cheers.